Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you for joining us once again. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul, and this is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
That's right. This is indeed West Coast Bias. That winter stove is heating up. And we do have some news, opinions, and a little trivia. On today's show, we'll be discussing recent acquisitions from the Mets, the Rangers, the Brewers, and what that means looking forward. Some injury updates, and possibly even some news coming by way of the Giants and some past players. Something to do with Tim Lincecum and Barry Bonds. All this and possibly more. And we will answer last week's trivia question, which technically wasn't last week, seeing as how we skipped a week. Thank you for sticking with us. But right now, we'll jump into some news we heard yesterday.
News yesterday.
The newest Yankee.
All a Twitter is Russell Wilson, the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks football team, was traded by the Texas Rangers to the New York Yankees. Evidently, this was a lifelong dream of Russell Wilson to play as a Yankee, and it is possible that he will get a shot, probably not in a major league game, but spring training game is a very real possibility that he'll be wearing the pinstripes.
Sure.
It's kind of a funny news story. Certainly caught everyone's attention. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be just one of those fun spring training quirky things, like couple years ago when Garth Brooks,
Garth
the country
Brooks.
Singer, played spring training with the San Diego Padres.
I don't remember
one year.
That. I don't remember.
You don't
that.
Remember this?
I don't remember that. No, Garth Brooks. I remember when Will Ferrell took the field on like
that was twenty teams
in 10 days or something.
Right.
Like that
was that was just last year. So that was
that was a couple years ago.
The Garth Brooks thing happened in the early 2000s. It was a big thing.
For the San Diego Padres?
San Diego Padres.
He's not a California boy, is he?
No, but I think the San Diego Padres were one of the only teams that were willing to actually work him out.
They're like, hey, it can't hurt us.
It doesn't mean much. Russell Wilson, while he's said that he's never wanted to let the being a two-sport star
completely leave the table.
Yeah, not to completely die. But here he is. He's a New York Yankee.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that the Seattle Seahawks will let him actually play a Major League Baseball game, but a little bit during the football off season to run around a baseball field, throw it around, take a few swings.
And, I saw him suited up, and he looks like a baseball player. I mean, he's an athlete.
He's an incredible athlete. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether or not he can hit the curveball is another issue entirely.
It's also the fact that I saw him taking some grounders, and they were very clean sweeps. Obviously, he's a little rusty since college. It's not as easy as it looks. The MLB players make it look really easy to just pick up a routine grounder.
That's probably a prerequisite of being a Major League Baseball player, right? Making the more difficult plays look easy.
Yeah, and Deion Sanders started his career with the Yankees in 1989, playing two major league seasons. Former Broncos quarterback John Elway played 42 games with Class A Oneonta. I don't know how to say that. In 1982. And Bo Jackson, of course, played both. But Bo and Deion weren't quarterbacks. And there's something about being a quarterback, there's just no way you could do two as a quarterback. It just seems like much, much more intensive to be a QB, which I don't. So I don't think we'll ever.
Well,
see
sure,
that.
Certainly, certainly mentally. So
right,
physically challenged, not so much. I mean, you have to be a great athlete.
But you're
going to talk about John Elway. I remember the Dan Patrick spot many, many years ago. I was saying about John Elway in college would stand at home plate and put balls over the right field wall 300 feet away. And if you thought that John Elway would have more power than that, you know, keep in mind that's a pretty long throw.
That's true.
So, putting a baseball over the wall 300 feet away on a line while standing flat-footed at home plate, yeah, that's an impressive arm. And that's what John Elway was really known for. And
got a good arm. Russell Wilson did play 2 years of pro ball as a second baseman in the Rockies system after being selected in the fourth round of the 2010 first-year player draft. He hit .229 with five home runs and only 315 at-bats.
That
2010 to 2011 season.
I would say that
it's better
than
Jordan.
But I would say that the Super Bowl ring on his finger says that he made the right choice.
Right. I think this is another one of those things, though, where his dad wanted them to play baseball, too. And I think he always did, too. And
be a Yankee. So good for him.
Yeah. Yeah, he did it. That's pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. And, there was some other news that broke mere minutes or maybe an hour after our last episode, which everybody is no doubt up to date, and that is the Brewers acquiring Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain. That's a pretty big deal, I think.
It is. It indicates that the Brewers are serious this season for chasing the Cubs and extending their lead over the Cardinals from last year's finish.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they have the strength of pitching to overcome the Cubs or any team in a short or long postseason series certainly remains to be seen. But
that's the thing. Jimmy Nelson's injury toward the end of last season that hurts. That one hurts.
It does. But now they have some serious depth. Ryan Braun has said that he is totally willing to move to first base or any other any other position that they would have him in, which shows that Ryan Braun's coming around and is in fact a very good teammate.
Mm.
This also gives the Brewers some trade leverage down the road as we get closer to the deadline. As they assess their needs, they have some serious pieces to trade for some serious pitching down the stretch.
They're looking good. They'll still have Zach Davies, Chase Anderson, who had a great season last year, Brent Sutter, Jelly Chassin, Giovanni Gallardo, Brandon Woodruff. Not peak, but their lineup, the way it's looking now, is Lorenzo Cain leading off, Christian Yelich number two, Eric Thames number three, Ryan Braun number four, Travis Shaw, Stephen Vogt, and then Jonathan Villar hitting eighth. I mean, it's just, they look pretty dangerous. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they might pick up Moustakas. I don't know. He's still out there. They're looking pretty damn good. I don't know. Again, the whole Jimmy Nelson injury, that one hurts. 199 strikeouts in 175 innings last year. He's out with a right rotator cuff strain and partial anterior labrum tear, which he suffered when diving back to first base as a runner. So it wasn't a pitching injury. So that could be good. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe we'll see him second half or maybe August, September. I don't know. We'll see how Milwaukee's doing then. But as of now, they're looking pretty good.
Yeah, the Brew Crew does look good. In addition to that Yelich deal, the same day, they also signed Lorenzo Cain.
Right.
One of those free agents that have been sitting on the list for a long time.
Big deal right there. 5-year, $80 million. It's pretty good.
There's nothing to sneeze at there. That my last little thing that I found concerning Kane and Yelich with the Brewers. Milwaukee traded Kane years ago, netting them Greinke. Eventually traded Greinke to the Angels in a deal that netted them Segura. Eventually they traded Segura to Arizona in the deal that netted them Diaz. And they traded Diaz to Miami in the Yelich deal the night they signed Kane.
Full circle.
Total full circle.
That's right. Marlins traded Yelich in exchange for Lewis Brinson, Monty Harrison, Isan Diaz, and Jordan Yamamoto, who maybe was just like a throw-in, but you know, who knows? I think it's pretty good. It's good for both teams, really. It's seems like win-win. I'm surprised it took so long.
Unless you're a Miami fan.
Well, their team was gone long ago. They got rid of everybody. Ozuna, D. Gordon, of course, Stanton. I mean, who do they have?
Well, that is the question. Yeah. Now, of course, we had the Miami Marlins clamoring yesterday that they are indeed going to be competitive this year, but
no.
Are they?
No, they're not. No, they're not. No, they're not. They're absolutely not. And they know that, and that's fine, which is why they, you know, got rid of Yelich, just sort of, which is kind of a mercy thing. I'm surprised they did it, because they had no real advantage, except for, you know, these outfielders and infielders and the one pitchers. You know, it's actually not a bad trade. Milwaukee is definitely going to be contending. Marlins, I just can't see how they, how could they? They're in the worst park. They don't have a team. Pitching, I mean, you know, I don't know. Sad, but who cares? Whatever. It's just the Marlins. It's fine.
They got the Marlins guy threatening to be not the Marlins guy anymore.
No, the Billy Marlin or Bobby, whoever the hell the Marlins guy, didn't he got fired, I believe.
Yeah, he was never working for the team. He is just a retired guy with more money than sense. And wants to go to all these major things.
Oh, you're talking about the guy that shows
I'm
up.
I'm talking
to every,
about the guy that shows up at every Marlins major guy. Sporting event wearing that bright orange Marlins jacket.
I thought you were talking about their mascot. Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
No. Yes. No, not the mascot.
That guy. That guy's everywhere. I finally did a little research on that guy because he's everywhere. He's even like an NBA finals.
He's very easy to spot in that bright orange Marlins jacket.
Bright orange. Yeah. I just hope that they go back to their old colors because that orange.
You like the teal better than the orange? Well, you're a Dodger fan, so you probably would.
It's just less offensive to the eye. I mean, nobody wants to see bright orange as you are wearing a Giants shirt right in front of you. I know we're in San Francisco, but come on. Black and orange or brown and orange, whatever the hell the colors are. No good. No good.
Brown and orange were the Padres for a short time in the 80s.
Same thing. Same thing. Giants, Padres, who knows? Who knows the difference out of it? Speaking of, though, it looks like they're going to retire Bonds' number 25, this summer.
August 11th is the date if you want to get to AT&T Park to see the ceremony. I've had the privilege of seeing a couple numbers retired for the Giants. Both happened at Candlestick. I saw the retiring of number 27. And the retiring of number 30.
Is that Gaylord Perry?
That is Juan Marichal and Orlando Cepeda.
Yeah, Cepeda. Got it. Let's see. Joining that list would be Christy Mathewson, John McGraw, Bill Terry, Mel Ott, Carl Hubble, Monty Irvin, Willie Mays, Gaylord Perry, and Willie McCovey. Pretty damn good. I know there's a lot of controversy, I don't know if it's a lot, but people aren't necessarily happy because they think you should have to be inducted into the National Hall of Fame before.
Well, that's,
but who cares? I mean,
that's a rule that the Giants have had, and they are ignoring this time. It is not a rule by any means.
It's not an official rule, right?
It's not an official rule for the Hall of Fame. It's not an official rule for Major League Baseball. Any team can retire any number for any reason at any time.
Right. And as Cincinnati has shown with Pete Rose, of course, retiring his number, as they should. I mean, when you're the greatest hitter, maybe of all time, I don't know, Ichiro's giving Pete Rose a run for his money, but still, you got to do it. And when you have the best player in your organization, Barry Bonds, I mean, come on, you got
to
do it.
Yeah, anyway, they don't necessarily need to officially retire the number in order for that number not to be worn again by any player. I mean, honestly, if you were a baseball player and had signed the contract with the Giants and were offered number 25 to wear in the back, would you take it?
No, yeah. you would get booed, I'm sure.
I don't know if you'd necessarily get
booed. It's not going to make people happy. I don't know.
But it's you wouldn't want the pressure, the association to wear that number. It'd be like another 49ers quarterback wearing number 16. No one's going to wear that, whether it's retired or not.
Just out of respect, I guess. That's true. And on August 11, looks like they'll be playing the Pirates, which is, that'll be pretty interesting.
It's an interesting choice. Yeah. I wonder if they talked to the Pirates organization beforehand to see if they wanted to contribute anything to the ceremony. I think it makes sense in that standpoint, or maybe it's just a slap in the face of, hey, here's this great player that you had that became great here, and we're retiring this number in front of you just to taunt you.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Oh yeah, and we also got McCutcheon too. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. McCutcheon. Yeah, that guy.
Your two best center fielders in the last 30 years. Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll see. Also, we got Timmy.
Tim, big time, Timmy Jim.
What's the news there?
News there is that he is poised to make a new comeback to the major leagues. He's going to be pitching for an invitation-only group of scouts and front office people to showcase his stuff.
His new persona.
He's been working out. He's looking pretty buff. He is. Whether or not he has that life back in his fastball and his curveball, if he can get a major league hitter out and someone signs him, good for him.
I do have an unconfirmed report that he hit 96 on the gun. Now, if he can, should he? Because it seems like he should just not even try to do that. He should just live in the low 90s if he can and keep it a sustainable output. Because, I mean, you know, the guy's 5'10". 5'11 with cleats, I guess, maybe. I don't know. He's the freak, you know? He shouldn't be able to do what he did.
He is the freak, and he's a lot of fun to watch. And when he was really good, he was really good.
Right.
There's no confirmation yet whether he's going to try to come back as a starter. Maybe he'll come back as
a long
reliever.
Man. Yeah.
Maybe a long man, maybe a setup, maybe a closer. I mean, if he's hitting 96 on the gun, unconfirmed, that's a good sign, you know, and maybe he doesn't have to sustain that for 6+ innings.
That's
maybe
true.
He only has to get 3 outs a game.
Knowing how competitive Lincecum is, though, I'm sure he's gunning for a starting position.
I'm sure he wants to because that's where he has been, but, you know, his body broke down before. He's 33 now. Certainly not getting any younger, but if the radar gun report is true, maybe he did find a fountain of youth.
Maybe. Well, let us not forget the showcase in 2016, in which in May the Angels signed him to a 1-year, $2.5 million contract.
An ERA over 9.
Yeah, 9.16. He went 2-6, 9 starts. You know,
he looked very, very, very hittable.
Walked 23. And gave up 11 home runs. He did strike out 32 in 38 innings, though, which, you know, I mean, that's not vintage Lincecum, but maybe mentally he's still there, and just maybe his body couldn't keep up. I don't know. I mean, he led the National League in strikeouts 3 years in a row, from 2008 to 2010. You know, I mean, in 2012, it started to decline. He posted a 5.18 ERA, and after that, it, you know, never got better. But who knows? You know, maybe having all of last year off got him a lot stronger. I don't know. We'll see.
We shall see. Certainly rooting for him. It'd be great to see him throw again. If he's got anything left in the tank, more power to him.
And the Giants are confirmed to be invited and attending this showcase on February 15th, correct?
As far as I know, yeah, they will be there.
Alrighty. injury updates here. Twins' Irvin Santana will be out for at least 3 months, it's looking like, after having surgery on the middle finger of his throwing hand. He's expected to be sidelined. We're not even going to see him for 10 to 12 weeks. He felt discomfort, let him know. They said it's not any one thing. It's just a result of cumulative stress from pitching. I don't know. You know, I mean, he was pretty solid last year. 16-8, 3.28 ERA, 211 innings. That's going to be a big innings eater that they're not going to have. They're sorely going to miss until at least May, which leads me to another rumor, which... Yu Darvish to Minnesota? I don't know.
Well, that's been floating around since the beginning of this hot stove season. Is Yu Darvish to Minnesota?
I think that would benefit them immensely.
I think it was said before, any team that he goes to will definitely benefit from his presence. Definitely. Which also is why I'm surprised that the Dodgers haven't at least made him an offer. Maybe they have, just not publicly.
Maybe.
Who knows?
The Twins have reportedly submitted a formal offer within the last day or two, though the specifics are unknown. Supposedly, he has multiple offers worth more than $1 million. If the Twins' offer is in that range, though, it will be the largest ever made by that organization. But, you know, I mean, come on, it's... When I was first thinking of Darvish to the Twins, I was thinking, he probably wouldn't want to go there, and I don't know. But dude, the American League Central just is garbage. It's a garbage Central. This is the Twins' chance to really... Okay, the Indians are going to take it, all right? Indians are going to take it, and they're probably going to take it by at least maybe 8 or 10 games. But outside of that, they're pretty much going wild card just with the Red Sox. I mean... Maybe Seattle, maybe the Angels, I guess, maybe. I mean, we will see. A lot of the projections on the Angels aren't as high as I thought they were going to be. We'll see what happens with Ohtani. If he's like an Ichiro, you know, everybody's doubting him, and then he comes in and just wins Rookie of the Year and MVP. I mean, who knows? It could happen. But it's looking, at least right now, with what we know, like the Twins could easily get into that wild card game with the Red Sox. I mean... The Chicago White Sox, garbage. Did I just say White Sox? Red Sox. Chicago White Sox, not going to do good. Detroit Tigers, maybe 65 games they're going to win. The Royals, I mean, come on. You know, Minnesota has a huge opportunity right now.
They do.
To pick up an ace and to really jumpstart this young, very young team who's, you know, been doing very well. Paul Molitor is coming back as the coach, I'm assuming. It looks like a dangerous sort of dark sleeper team. And if they can get somebody like Darvish, wow, they can. I think they'll really.
Who would lend some credibility for sure?
Yeah, because it's kind of like the American League West. Like it's pretty much Houston's to lose, and the Central's pretty much the Cleveland's to lose. You know, and the East, everybody's projecting the Yankees to win, and I'm sure they will. I can't see how they're not going to win that division.
No, their lineup is much too strong at this point. They've got some good young pitching.
Yeah, and not to mention one of the most dangerous lineups out there. Even without...
The new Mr. Met?
Yes. We're completing each other's sentences here. That's right. The Mets acquire Todd Frazier. Of course, they had acquired Jay Bruce before, but Todd Frazier gets a 2-year, $17 million contract. Yankees didn't seem interested, and you know, at least not be on a 1-year deal. I think this is a great deal for the Mets. I think the Mets are going to come out on top on this one for sure. You know, 2-year, $17 million. I think a couple years ago, Frazier could have got way more than that, but right now, it's looking good. He's a high energy guy. He's going to be good in the clubhouse with him and Jay Bruce right there too. I mean, it's looking pretty good. Frazier has hit 102 home runs in the last 3 seasons, including 27 last year. I think it's going to be pretty good for them. I don't know. What do you think? Mets?
I think it works. Watched an interview with on Frazier last night, and he was very happy to be with the Mets, very happy not to be leaving New York. Mm-hmm. He's from New Jersey originally, so he feels right at home. He brings a certain energy to the game, is happy to go out and play every single day. And the Mets might need a little bit of that to not, stink so much.
Yeah, Mets have no speed. They don't steal any bases, but they did lead the National League in home runs last year with 224. Throw in Todd Frazier in that mix. Holy shit, I don't know. It's looking pretty good. Jay Bruce, 29 and 103 games before he got traded to the Indians. So, okay, we're looking at center field, Michael Conforto, if he's healthy. Juan Lagares, either way. Asdrubal Cabrera at second, Jay Bruce in right, Cespedes in left, Frazier at third, Agon, let us not forget Adrian Gonzalez, first base, Travis d'Arnaud, Rosario short, I don't know, still have Nimmo and Jose Reyes and Flores on the bench. They're not looking terrible.
No, they don't look terrible on paper. They did, like you said, lead the league in home runs, but it wasn't enough to get them past the Nationals.
Nationals are tough, and they're going to be even tougher. So,
now this is the window's closing for the Nationals, isn't it? Are they going to be able to re-sign Bryce Harper next year? Are they going to even attempt?
In winter, yeah. Well, that is interesting.
This is his last year of his rookie contract, and right. He's going to be a super sought-after free agent. Record-breaking contracts, right. Probably, all of that.
Yeah, exactly. He's probably going to get the highest contract ever in history this winter. There is something interesting, though. Thinking about... what's his name? Agent Scott Boras.
Scott Boras.
Who's
notorious.
Harper's agent. He's Scherzer's agent.
He's so many players'
Strasburg's
agents.
Agent. And he's also Jake Arrieta's agent. And so there's talks, maybe Arrieta to the Nationals? Wow. Can you imagine that one? That would be pretty insane. That's going to put them over the top, I would say. Arrieta isn't nearly what he was 2 years ago, but he's still an ace, and he's still an innings eater. And who knows, maybe he changes scenery, might do him some good. Scott Boras and the owner of the Nationals, Tom Werner, I think they're friends or they're colleagues. I don't know. They know each other. So it seems like this might happen. I don't know. Arrieta reportedly wants something like 160 over 6 years. I definitely not going to get that.
No, not this off season. No. It's a different kind of off season for a lot of these free agents. There's a lot of talk of collusion amongst the owners. There's a little bit of talk about a strike coming, but
boo.
This CBA that was negotiated last year is exactly what the players wanted and negotiated for, and they're realizing now it's like, oh, that wasn't such a good idea. But whether it's something to strike over, I don't know. I think it's whether it's collusion, I don't think so. I think it's just
clubs getting smart.
This is free market capitalism at work,
right? Yeah, it's clubs have been burned by these long-term contracts, and they understand this, and I don't think they want to make that same mistake. Apparently the Arizona is maybe in talks with offering JD a long-term contract. The Red Sox supposedly 5-year, $125 million deal, right? That's supposedly what the Red Sox offer. Who knows?
It's all rumor and conjecture with all these players at this point. No one really knows what the truth is, except for the players and the agents involved. But
right.
It seems like a lot of money to me, and I'd certainly take 5 years, $125 million to go play for any major league team, but sadly I am not that good of a baseball player, so here I am talking about it on my free time just dreaming of being on the field.
Right. look, I'm not opposed to guys trying to get as much money as they possibly can. That's what everybody does in their daily life anyway. I mean, that's how the world works. That's what
absolutely
we should,
sure.
So I don't know. I think we're.
But when you
people are freaking out, I don't think we should even be worrying about this. It'll all figure itself out. The ship will always right itself. You know,
most definitely. In the meantime, all these unsigned free agents are going to have their own training camp. Did you hear about this?
I did not hear about this.
This was yesterday. A little bit more. I heard about it this morning as I was getting ready for my day. Major League Baseball is going to put together a camp for all the unsigned free agents to come and work out, practice, showcase their talents to help them get a job as spring training progresses.
That seems almost a bit conspiracy-ish right there. Now I'm starting to think, well, fuck, maybe there is something to this. I don't know.
Well, but in order to go to a spring training camp, you have to be invited. Yeah. You have to have some sort of contract to be out on a roster somewhere, unless you're a non-roster invitee. But most of the time, non-roster invitees, the club has some idea that they will be offered a contract or already have a contract, like Otani.
Right. So that's interesting. Is this going to be in Arizona or Florida?
Well, that's certainly things. And there's really not.
Going to build a whole new facility for these guys, and I don't know. It actually does seem kind of. Seems like that might happen, and then it might happen. It just might be a thing from now on, and then you might even be a chance for other guys. Maybe play like independent ball or something.
Yeah, independent league guys. Someone say, "Hey, I used to play pretty good college ball. Maybe I'll walk on into this unsigned camp and right. see how I compare with these major leaguers who are looking for a job. Maybe I can snag a job.
Yeah,
and even in the minor leagues, from some independent league getting into a major league affiliated league, that's huge.
Yeah,
if your dream is to play." Go play.
Exactly. That's what Rich Hill was doing for years. He left Major League Baseball and just played at Rhode Island, Independence League ball, and Red Sox, picked him up from there. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there are guys out there that are legit that maybe don't have the motivation or who knows. Maybe they're busy. Maybe they have a full-time job, you know. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool though. Give them a little opportunity.
Yeah, like minor league baseball notoriously does not pay a whole heck of a lot.
It does not. Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm sure. I'm not worried. I'm not worried at all. I'm pretty sure everything will work itself out. Another Rangers with Sunghwan Oh. Oh is agreed to a 1-year, $2.75 million deal with the Rangers. Seems pretty good, you know. With St. Louis last year, he didn't have a great year last year. Actually, he had a pretty poor year. But in 2016, he went 6-3 with 19 saves, 1.92 ERA in 80 innings. He's got the potential there. Last year, not so hot, 4.10 ERA in only 60 innings. He does have 4 blown save opportunities in the last 2 seasons, but it's still, you know, it's a pretty good acquisition, I think. He is 35 years old, though. In Korea, he was nicknamed the Final Boss, which is kind of cool. Kind of like that.
The Final Boss.
Like a Neo Geo reference or something. What else? I don't think that's kind of does it for the acquisitions, maybe.
It does. Well, there's a couple retirement announcements. First one was 12-year veteran Glenn Perkins of the Twins decided to hang him up.
I thought he had announced that like last year or something, no?
I am unclear on that. I just know that there was a story about him hanging up after 12 years. He was happy to move on with the next part of his life. Still loves the game, but is ready to stop playing. The other notable retirement announced is Chief Wahoo. the
forced retirement, but
even so, this somewhat lovable at very controversial cartoonish mascot of the Cleveland Indians, Chief Wahoo, after 60 years as on-field mascot will no longer be after the
2019 season?
Well, no, after this coming season, after the 2018 season.
That's right.
This
okay.
is his last season,
right.
presumably to clear out the warehouses and everything and come up with a new logo design for the 2019 All-Star Game, which will be in Cleveland.
That's right. And they've been sort of switching off with just that Block C, like that old-timey Cleveland C,
a lot
since
of people,
2014, I believe. So
yeah, as an alternate,
right.
a lot of people don't like it.
I like it. I think it's
something
nice. It's
clean
and
classic.
It's simple. Right.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's something that they had used in the past.
Right.
I saw some alternates out there floating around a Block C that was a little bit thicker, had some feathers off the
See,
back.
Even that, I don't know, you know.
But it's not a cartoonish representation
right. yeah.
of a group of peoples. It is a symbol of the group of peoples that also is the team name, so it makes sense in that, but it's not such a...
It's not as overtly offensive as a big grinning guy with
exactly with great big teeth and
right.
and a small head.
Yeah.
But this so inside the C is the I for Indians, so it incorporates the C and the I for Cleveland Indians and gives a little bit of indication of where the name Indians comes from.
Yeah, it was
an interesting thing. It's not anything. Look it up if you want to
sure.
see. There's certainly online pictures. You can tell us what you think by emailing us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com.
Oof, we forgot. That's
you
right.
You can also like and follow us on Facebook at West Coast Bias, and we are now officially on iTunes. So
that's right.
Can,
we are on iTunes. Yes.
And so follow us, subscribe there, give us a nice high rating so we can get our listenership up and keep producing more of these fun podcasts.
That's right, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, also on podomatic.com. But anywhere or any way you listen to your podcasts, we're there now. We are in your brain, so be ready. Now, you know, call me old-fashioned, but I like just... plain or just the non-changing logo. I mean, whatever happened to just the LA or the SF or the
well,
NY, you know?
Nothing happened to those.
Right, exactly. and I'm going to go even one step further and say, why are there even mascots? You know, I know you might be partial to Lou Seal, which is the Giants mascot, which I don't know if that's supposed to be some androgynous tip. Is it Lucille or is it Lucille? Is it a guy? Or is it a guy? Who knows? I don't know. Seems unnecessary to me.
Dodgers certainly do not
have a mascot.
I do know
nor
some
do they
people.
Need one.
I do know some people who know the man inside the Lucille costume.
So it is a man,
and there uh-huh. is some stories there that might not be suitable
uh-oh.
For a younger. Ears.
He's a little
but,
raunchy. I've seen that guy do some raunchy things. I've seen him.
He's
like
entertaining.
People,
you know,
yeah.
the whole deal with the mascots, from the Philly Fanatic to Mr. Met, and, you know, Dino the dinosaur
right.
there in
Orbit.
Colorado.
Orbit.
The,
yeah.
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 The San Diego Chicken, one of the original ones.
San Diego Chicken?
They're just there for comic relief, something to entertain the fans.
I've already had a baseball game. I don't need any more entertainment. I don't need the cup. Okay. No. All
right. I agree, but they're there anyway, and they're probably not going anywhere.
Right. So at the very least, just keep your jersey simple. I don't want to see a new Marlins or new Rays jersey every 2 years. I can't keep up with this. And are they not the Diamondbacks anymore? Are they the D-backs? Is that something that happened? Like the Rays? They're not the Devil Rays, right? Because they were the Devil
no,
Rays.
No, but they
obviously.
Will be wearing that jersey three or four times this year during the season.
Oh, okay. I like the old pinstripes, you know, the old teal and black, whatever they had.
Well, they certainly won.
Marlins.
Yeah, Marlins, they certainly
now
won.
Now I'm cross-referencing these Florida teams.
They certainly won two World Series wearing those colors, those uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, who? The Marlins?
The Marlins.
But no, because in... yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was thinking of the Diamondbacks. I'm all over the place.
The Diamondbacks have so many jerseys they can wear, one every day of the week, right. and still have one when for laundry day.
They are black and red now. What happened?
I don't know. They decided they didn't want to be purple anymore.
I'm not going to lie. Black and red is a little bit better than anything that they've
done
before.
I have no problem with the color schemes.
It's just a huge difference. It's a huge... How do you just change your colors like that? I mean, logo is one thing, but colors, you know? I don't know. I don't know. What are you going to do? It's like
creating
the Marlins.
A team. They're also a young team. You know, it would be something else if say the Dodgers decided to switch to some other shade of blue.
Could you imagine that?
Giants red. Wearing brown, it's these teams have been around for a very long time.
And by the way, black and orange equal brown, so it's okay. I think they kind of already are wearing that. But that's
I wouldn't blame them for changing.
It's not Halloween every day, but in San Francisco it is, at least during baseball season.
Well, no, you walk around the certain parts of the city, and it's like Halloween all year round.
There's some very strange
characters walking around.
Oh, that's
the city.
True. That's true. In that sense, yes, we still do. We still retain them, and I love the city for that. You know, we have the best. Freaks, we do, honestly. I wouldn't even mind changing the name. What about the San Francisco Seals? That makes a little more sense.
Oh, well, that was a team,
right?
Before the Giants showed up, yeah. Right? Exactly. Yeah. History and the first stadium that the Giants played in was Seals Stadium. Mm-hmm. It was downtown, not too far from where the stadium is now.
I occasionally see Seals jerseys in the city, and it's kind of cool, you know? I like it. It's like seeing the old Negro League jerseys, which is pretty awesome, too.
But the Giants are the classic name. That's the one that's been around since 1883.
Exactly. I wouldn't want them to change, no. But, you know, even a team like the Washington Nationals, I can't see them changing at all. And I like that they always have the same. They just the classic Walgreens W, you know? It's fine. It's, you know, but at least they, I don't think they have an alternate jersey, do they? Maybe color scheme.
I don't believe so that they do. But they're a new team.
That's a new team, exactly.
A new team, but they have a nice classic, very clean look. The Diamondbacks, when they first came in the league, Diamondbacks, maybe they changed to D-backs because it's easy to get that whole chant going. Let's go D-backs.
Let's go D-bags for both sides of the G. Yeah, you change the CK to a G. Yeah, it's too easy.
I think that just shows the lack of creativity. I mean, you got to come up with a chant that incorporates Diamondbacks. I mean, it's only one extra syllable, right?
That's true. Yeah, well, yeah.
I also really have always really liked the Diamondbacks, the D coming into a snake head on their hat. I thought that was a great look. I wish they would wear that hat.
That is a cool one.
More.
What about just Diamondbacks? You see, that's easy.
See, there
it
you go.
Writes itself. Boom, boom, boom. You know, you don't have to say "Let's go." We know where we are, right? I mean, come on. Although when Diamondbacks play the Dodgers, there's like usually more blue in that stadium than red and black.
Well, it happens.
San Diego, same thing. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, San Diego turns into a Giants stadium south. The Giants are down there. There's more Giants fans in San Diego than San Diego Padre fans down there. At least that show up to the game.
Well, I know where I will be on March 29th. And I will be wearing green and white because, hey, let's support the A's. The A's will be having their home opener against the Angels, which will be opening day. And the question is, will Ohtani pitch or bat or both?
I
can't be both, right?
Because I will be in of the same general location as you, presumably in the same row.
That's right. Not in the same seat, but in
I will be there as well. I'm hoping to see both. I'd love to see this kid throw the ball. I'd love to see this kid hit the ball, see what he's got.
I'd love it either way. It's going to be fun either way.
I however, will not be rocking the green and yellow.
Really?
Really.
I say green and white because I only have an old A's hat and it's green and white, which I kind of like. Oh, you know? Yeah. Look, I have no American League allegiance. I don't care. I've lived in the Bay over a decade. You know, I'll never wear black and orange. So, hey, you know. And the A's are fun to root for. You know, and who knows? You know, they have a lot of young guns coming up this year. I know they got rid of Ryan Healy.
They always have a lot of young guns coming up this year.
That's true.
And then once they're good, they trade them away.
Get rid of them. Ship them out. That's right.
Before they get too expensive.
I don't know. Is there any other more interesting game opening day? Of course, you know, maybe like a...
opening day is opening day.
Bumgarner Kershaw is always fun, and maybe Scherzer, and I don't know.
I don't know who's playing who for opening day. I haven't studied the schedule that intensely
yet. But I think the Angels, I think Ohtani, I think that's got to be the most exciting. I mean, who knows? That's the thing. We don't know what's going to happen.
Well, certainly the most intriguing. Yes. You know, opening day, no matter where you are, is a very exciting day. It's New Year's Day to some. It's the promise of anything is possible. Right. You know, for a long time before the Cubs won, you know, it was their chance to, be in contention. At least for one day. The dream is real. Then after opening day, we'll see who's really good and who is not going to live up to expectations.
Are they
going to
be on ATV watch on Bumgarner, or are they going to be keeping a close eye on that kid?
Certainly when he goes to Colorado the first time, right. Absolutely.
He's just going to have a chaperone all season, right? I mean, if I own the Giants... I would just pay a private eye full time, or four or five of them. Just follow that guy everywhere he goes, right? Pretend you're the NSA for 180 days, whatever. I mean, you know, it's whatever it takes.
Pretty valuable. It's, you know, what he did last year was incredibly stupid.
Is it unforgivable?
Irresponsible.
It's unforgivable?
I don't know if it's unforgivable. He came back. He made 17 starts. He did well. We'll see how off-season of rest, how he heals, if he's truly unaffected by the injury. We'll see if he's the same old bum. If he's the same old bum, yeah, forgive and forget. But if he's lost something before his really hit his prime, then, there's something there that... needs to be addressed, and it's probably will be taken out of his next contract.
Maybe Timmy will lift him up. Maybe we'll get
rising. Timmy lifts all boats, huh?
I don't know. I think Bartolo Colon did get signed to a minor league deal as well.
He did agree to a minor league deal. I heard that he was only wanting to accept a major league deal.
Well, you know, that's how it goes. Whenever you get invited, you got to go to spring. You got to see what happens. If they don't call him up, maybe, who knows? Maybe he'll say, screw it, I'm done. But I don't know. What do you think? Who cares?
I think that's why they play the game.
Bartolo Colon's a very interesting guy. You know, I don't know. He's got he's second right now in active strikeout leaders with 2,454, next to CC Sabathia, who's number one, 2,846, and of course all time leading strikeouts. Nolan Ryan, of course. Now, before the season starts, we like to talk about maybe records that may be broken, and certainly records that will never be broken. And it seems like Nolan Ryan's strikeout record will never be broken, but also his walks will never be broken because he's got the most walks.
And that's walks issued.
Walks issued, right. Yes.
He played for a very long time at a very high level.
He did. And he always just tried to strike the guy out. That was it. He never tried to do anything else, you know? So you're going to walk a lot of guys, but you're also going to strike out a lot of guys. He has 5,714 career strikeouts. Number two, Randy Johnson, who might not ever be passed, 4,875. So, I mean, it's just insane. Like, that gap is crazy. He pitched 24 seasons. Guys just don't have that longevity anymore, you know? When you combine CeCe and Bartolo, it's still not enough. There's still 414 strikeouts short. The two active leaders combined. It's unbelievable. It's unreal. Yeah,
philosophy has changed as well. There's not as many pure strikeout guys anymore.
No, and
as far as saying any more on that, I think there's really not that many pure strikeout guys, period.
It is crazy. Well,
that
Kershaw, Darvish,
and in the same token,
Sale,
not many guys with that kind of longevity, period.
Right. Nobody's got that kind of longevity.
That's part of what made these players so special, is that they played for so long.
And
for three decades.
Yeah.
I think we read someone, Nolan Ryan, played in four different decades.
Right. Yeah. Seven no hitters. His numbers are insane. And he was also played at a time where guys didn't strike out a lot. I mean, you know, in most of those seasons, the most a guy would strike out maybe 120 times, and that he would, like, lead all of baseball. So this is in an era where guys didn't strike out, and Nolan Ryan, and I'm sure, you know, you would never tell any other pitcher, try to strike every guy out, because most managers don't really want that. You're going to raise your pitch count up, you know, it's just a lot more variables. You're going to walk a lot of more guys, and... But that was just him, and that's all he ever wanted to do. And
he didn't want anyone to hit him.
Most no hitters. I mean, maybe it's possible somebody breaks that. I don't know. I can't see that happening with seven. He also has the most one hitters, with 12. Well, him and Bob Feller have 12.
Hmm.
But Ryan has the most two hitters with 18. And the most three hitters with 31.
It's 31 three hit games. You know, I had the privilege of seeing Nolan Ryan pitch several times in person. I don't remember him walking
as a Ranger,
many people, as an Astro, when the Astros in the National League and played the Giants.
That's right.
And got to go to many Giants Astros games, and I got to see Nolan Ryan pitch. Same with Randy Johnson. Got to see him pitch quite a bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying he was in the National League West for so many years, and then ended up ending his career with the Giants. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I saw Randy Johnson pitch a few times as well, but when he was still a Mariner, going to, like, more Angel games, you know, and seeing him there. And that was that. The 90s Mariners were always such a great team to watch, with Emar, Buehner, Griffey. I mean,
yeah,
those teams were pretty incredible. Yeah, guys like that. I mean, you know, Clayton Kershaw is easily the pitcher of the generation. But even Kershaw, who's led the league in strikeouts three times and the only pitcher in history to lead ERA 3 years in a row, even he would still need to average 225 strikeouts per year for another 16 years until he was 46 just to catch Ryan. Like, it's crazy. It's just insane.
That is pretty... daunting task for any human.
Chris Sale, who got 300 last year, 300 strikeouts, he'd have to average 300 strikeouts per year until he was 44 to catch Nolan Ryan. It's just insane. So I don't think we'll ever see that one broken. That's almost as tough as beat the streak, right? 56 games.
That's the number that immediately comes to my mind when I hear of a unbreakable record is 56.
It's crazy. And the more time goes on and the more we understand these very intricate stats, the more impossible that stat becomes. Some stats or some records might seem a little easier, but that one only gets harder as time goes on.
Perhaps. I think only because it will not exist within a vacuum. if there was no media scrutiny such as it is in today's game, that it would be possible to actually get 56 hits in consecutive games. In recent history, as players have approached 30, 40 hit streaks, the level of attention from local and national media questions every day, are you going to be able to break the record? Are you going to be able to get to 50? It becomes impossible to stay focused enough not think about it. Baseball is such a mental game, and being able to stay focused in the box just to try to hit the ball. And then when you have someone in your ear constantly, break the streak, break the streak, break the streak, you're not going to break the streak because you're thinking about it too much. The pressure becomes too great. If these players were able to play in a vacuum, much better chance of breaking 56.
Not a good chance, but better chance, sure.
Better chance.
But, you know, in that same vein, you could almost make that argument even stronger for Joe DiMaggio. I mean, because this is a time when baseball was everything. Everybody all over the country was watching him beat this streak. He was on every TV channel, movies. He was before every movie, reels. They would count at him every single day. If anything, maybe he was even more scrutinized than a player might be nowadays.
No,
where there are
not
more teams,
not a chance.
There are more players,
not a chance.
Social media, you could turn it off. But you know, Joe DiMaggio was not left alone. I mean, when he was Willie Keeler,
he was not left alone. But
he's a very shy guy, or a very personal guy. You know, a very private guy, I should say. At least he was. You know, right? I don't know. I think the scrutiny certainly is very intense for day-to-day players on their personal lives, which never seem to be personal anymore, which always bothers me. But I don't know. You know, Jackie Bradley Jr. had 29 a few years back. Andre Ethier had 30 a few years back. Jimmy Rollins had 38 in 2005. That's a big one. That's pretty cool.
It was, but and the level and intensity of the questionings and the coverage that he got was nowhere near the level that Joe DiMaggio was, even given the era and the time. It wasn't.
This is interesting. In 2011, an Atlanta Brave had a 33-game hitting streak, and if you gave me 100 guesses, I don't think I would guess who this guy was. Can you? I'll give you one guess.
I kind of remember that. I don't remember the player.
He's really good at striking out.
Not much of a hint. There's a lot of players like that.
Right. 2011, Atlanta Braves, Dan Ugla had a 33-game hit streak. Yeah.
Ugla.
I think of Ugla's Uglies in the Marlins, all those women that go out there when he was a Marlin. I don't know. Chase Utley in 06 had a 35-game hitting streak. So, you know, but you're right. The difference between 35 or even 40 to 56 is just insane. Only five other guys have hit 40 or more games in a row. And you might have heard of Ty Cobb, George Sisler, Pete Rose. You might have heard of these guys.
Yeah.
That's a record that'll never be broken. And I think Johnny Vandermeer's record, which seems almost impossible to break, has more of a chance of being broken than Joe DiMaggio's record. And Johnny Vandermeer famously pitched two no-hitters in a row. That's impressive.
It is impressive. Well, so what are your thoughts about some of these other hitting records? 60, 61, 70, 73.
Well, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think 73, I think we might see that. I think
really?
We might see that. I don't think we'll ever see... What's the total? I should know this off the top of my head. What's Bonds' total career?
I should know this off the top of my head, too.
It's not 7:14.
No, it's more than 7:56. I have it written down here in my notes somewhere, but I want to say 7:83. That's what comes into my head.
It is 7:62.
7:62.
Hank Aaron had 7:55. Yeah, Bonds had 7:62. Pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. On our Facebook page, Samuel, you have posted a video that you sent to me, and that is, it was 10 minutes of Albert Pujols grounding into double plays.
Now, I haven't posted that yet. There will,
it's up,
though.
It's up.
It is? Okay.
Yeah. It will be.
It will be.
Albert Pujols' unbreakable record of grounding in to 362 career double plays, which seems like a knock on him, but it really isn't. To hit into that many double plays, you have to be an incredible hitter.
For a long time.
Right. And Pujols has never struck out more than he's walked, which is very impressive. So he still finishes, or he's not done with his career, but he still has more walks than strikeouts career. He passed Cal Ripken Jr. For when Cal Ripken had grounded to 350 double plays. And again, all the guys in the top five are amazing hitters. Pudge Rodriguez, Hank Aaron, Carl Yastrzemski. I mean, it's very rare air up there, right? And so, to ground into 362 and counting, I don't think that'll ever be broken. I don't know. Maybe. But you have to be a damn good hitter. You have to, as he did, in his first 10 seasons, the worst he hit was 312. The fewest home runs he had was 32. I mean, he had driven 100 runs and scored 100 runs every year, but one where he only scored 99 runs. I mean, it's just...
He's an incredible player. He has been for a long time.
Yeah,
no doubt about that. No doubt about that.
Pujols is the only one to have walked more than he has struck out among active players with over 1,000 plate appearances. Joey Votto might pass that eventually, but you know, when he was first starting out, he struck out a lot more than he does now. Miguel Cabrera is second on the active list with 294. Again, maybe one of the best hitters of his generation, of course. So it's not a knock. It is a negative stat, I guess. Sure, but it is. There's a lot more to it, but I don't think that. I don't know. Do you think that's possible? Do you think we'll see a guy? I mean, who knows? Maybe Miguel Cabrera, if he plays another 10 years. I don't think he will. But, you know, you never know.
I never know. It's hard to imagine some of these records being broken only because it's hard to imagine some of these records.
Yeah.
The greatest things about baseball, and certainly one of the focuses of this podcast, or at least what we hope to be, is that fantasy aspect. And that fantasy aspect is heavily dependent on the stats and the record keeping that has been part of the game since, well, 1900. We're getting on 117 full seasons of stats and records meticulously curated and maintained that allow us to make these comparisons of players across era and everything, and it's just something that makes the game so great and so entertaining in so many other ways than just a pure athletic performance standpoint.
And longevity is going to have a lot to do
a
with
lot to
all
do
these
with
records.
Yes. I know one thing you can pick out about all these great players that we've talked about just this episode, Bonds and Ryan and Johnson and Pujols, is that they've all played a long time. 17, 20,
24,
4 years.
Right.
That is a long time to play. That is a long time to play at a high level.
Long time to pitch. Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what position you are, it is a long time to be that good. And the health and the longevity plays a big part about where you'll stand in the lore of baseball history when your season comes to an end.
So, we do not have time to get into sleepers and bangs or busts, but next week, we assure you we will. And also, maybe what breakout players of last year are going to be still good next year. And, of course, the watch list of all these new kids and the 2008 prospect list. We will talk a little bit more about that next week.
Absolutely. 6 days till pitchers and catchers report. And as the training camps for Major League Baseball open up, we will be talking a lot more about the current players and sleepers and prospects and how to set up a fantasy rotisserie roster.
Right.
Baseball is going to be right around the corner. It certainly feels like summer already here in San Francisco.
It is hot today. It is. Well, it's always hot in our little studio here, but it is exceptionally hot today. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is mid 70s in San Francisco today. It is
probably February, high 80s in the studio today.
It is February 8th, and it feels like summer in San Francisco. So if you need a break from cold weather, if you happen to be listening from someplace where it is cold, well, we'll send you our warm thoughts, and you're certainly welcome to come and hang out with us.
Please do.
Or in the city in general.
And if you get a trivia question correct, you have a free invitation and all the beer you can drink, sort of, if you come. Speaking of that, please refresh me, Mr. Paul, on last week's trivia question.
Certainly. Last week's trivia question was, who was the first third baseman to be inducted to the Hall of Fame by the Baseball Writers Association of America on this, yes, the first ballot that he was eligible?
I had one guy in mind, and I'm pretty sure it's right. I haven't cheated yet. We did get two answers so far. Right. One of them from Johnson Arroyo. He says George Brett.
George Brett is a good guess. It is not correct.
All right, we got another one from Travis B. 29. He says Wade Boggs.
Wade Boggs, another good guess. Definitely was
A little bit later.
A first bout Hall of Famer, right. But the answer, correct answer to this question, it was inducted in 1983, which I believe was Wade Boggs' second year in the league. So Wade Boggs was still a very young man.
Still skinny
at the time.
Skinny Boggs. He hadn't drinking 50 beers on the cross country
And he hadn't made his fame as a Yankee yet either.
That's true. My guess, well,
yes. What is your guess?
Brooks Robinson.
Brooks Robinson is 100% correct. He was the first third baseman to be inducted to the Hall of Fame on the first ballot by the BBWAA.
Mm-hmm. That's just what I think of when I'm thinking of watching old World Series and stuff. It's just always him sweeping up that corner. Well, better luck next week. But for this coming week, we do have another trivia question.
We do have another trivia question, and this trivia question is very West Coast bias. But it is an interesting question nonetheless. Who was the last pitcher to hit a walk-off home run?
Ooh. Who was the last pitcher to hit a walk-off home run? So it's probably somewhat recent, I'm assuming. Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know. No hints.
It's in my lifetime? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do I remember it occurring? No. Do I remember the players involved? Absolutely. I watched both pitchers involved many times at Candlestick Park.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Alrighty. I'm excited. I do not know this one, although I'll have about a week or so to mull it over. Yeah. We will be back next week. Please email your, or you don't have to email, but baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Also on Facebook at
West Coast Bias.
West Coast Bias, that's right. Podomatic website, iTunes, leave a comment. Do it however you want to do it. I know, you know, you guys, there's no rules. Just get it right. As always, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some video.